The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt. And again today, as I've been doing every week, and actually for just about a year now, I will be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, of course, those rich, as you know, with the essence of constant renewal. I am excited about being here today. It's great to be back again. We have a wonderful sea breeze blowing where I am. It is a sustained coastal wind. It is warm and inviting, and I think appropriate for sure to whip up the flames of our conversation. Our focus today really is minds afire in some ways, and our exploration is about headroom. Headroom for change and transformation, headroom for cultural shifts in our organizations, headroom needed to engage the increasing complexity, uncertainty, and ambiguity of our challenges, both those today and those coming. My guest today, and to stimulate our thinking, is John McGuire, senior faculty at the Center for Creative Leadership, and the backdrop view to our conversation is John's experience and his book, Transforming Your Leadership Culture, which I think will ultimately prove to be the most important book on this topic in our era. It is unlike the myriad of same old perspectives circulating on change and transformation. And to me, it really points clearly to why the lion's share of change efforts that really go on ultimately fail, and often fail miserably. So for many weeks now, we have been talking about the era of extraordinary change coming our way. We've been talking about why, when, and how we need to engage in our leadership and in getting out front, in tending to the garden of the shifts that are arising. And today, I think we have a most pragmatic build-on to our review so far. It is relevant, I think, to leadership everywhere. It's relevant to the private sector, to the public sector, to civil society organizations at large, at all levels of these organizations. And I'd like to really open today with a framing perspective to get to that, and because I think it'll help serve as a through line to our dialogue, and it'll give us a starting sense of something to build upon. And the perspective is this, and tune into this because I think this is rich with the fabric of where we can head, the rich of the fabric of the backdrop of the challenges we're facing. Transformation at the political level is possible. We've done it before. Our nation began as a dependent culture, a group of colonies under the authoritarian rule of the king. And rebellion against this oppression, colonists developed more independent minds. Together, against tremendous odds, they created a new form of government that did ultimately change this world. Our independent phase has served us well. That pioneer spirit, with its bent toward local government and pull yourself up by the bootstraps beliefs, became our cultural cornerstone. We also valued innovation and technical expertise that ultimately helped us propel to superpower status. And built on our rich heritage of independence, now veers far toward something more self-interest in orientation. Our nation needs to break the political logjam with a declaration of interdependence. A bigger, bolder leadership mindset that's committed to learning, flexibility, collaboration, and crossing boundaries. We need a new kind of leadership itself. one that's more concerned about solving big challenges for all our futures than winning the next political battle with the other guy and the ones that they lose in and we win in. That perspective from our guest today, John McGuire, written for, excerpted from, and I've quoted directly just from a piece of it in the Washington Post earlier this year at the time of President Obama's State of the Union address, dependence to independence to interdependence. That's the backdrop of our conversation today, and we're going to be drawing upon John's rich cross-sector experience with the likes of the Federal Reserve Bank, the U.S. Postal Service, Eli Lilly, Cirque du Soleil, California Endowment, just to name a few. And all this is built on the master's degrees from both Harvard and Brandeis. Rich experience abounding and really put well together in the book. John, it is fabulous to have you with us on Zoomed.
Thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and so I must ask, though, I loved that article. It really resonated with me. I'm curious, what response have you actually gotten since you've written that?
Well, of all the things we've written here under the umbrella of the Center for Creative Leadership, that particular piece, that op-ed piece that, as you said, ran concurrent with Obama's State of the Union address, struck a nerve that I didn't expect. I've gotten feedback from people who have forwarded that piece and shared it with everyone from their mother to their senator, and have heard back from mothers and senators alike around the ideas. I think that people are so fed up with a governance system that is in lockdown and doesn't work, that some of the basic ideas about working together interdependently across boundaries really resonated with folks. And I think further in the article where we talked about the difference between debates or either-or kinds of based arguments that exist in independent systems that have their place need to give way at some points to more open-ended dialogues, which gives the opportunity for more win-win and integrative work in interdependent systems. So the nerve that got struck ran across family lines and political lines and business and organizational lines. I was really surprised by how resonant it was.
Well, I think it's going to strike a chord with our listener audience here, John, because I think this is a lot of what we've been talking about, the both and the larger perspective and how to bridge this in collaboration. But before we go down and really get even into some of the content of the work and the flow that I started to even point to here, I'm speaking about touching a nerve on this. I'm curious, John, I like to start often, as my listeners know, with the personal side of this. Where did this passion in the belly, or where did the nerve get really initially touched for you about cultures, about change, about the relationship of leadership? How did that start for you?
Well, it started for me a long, long time ago, really in graduate school, when I was first introduced to developmental theory in college and then in graduate school. But that was dormant for a long time, and what really happened was two things kind of collided. I had been working around my personal philosophy, trying to figure out what do I actually believe in, how do I think the world works, those kinds of things. And I had been working on my personal philosophy based on a pretty strong growing belief that there were at least two parts of me that were going on concurrently. And one part I just called my functional self, which had to do with paying the mortgage and doing a job and sort of handling the world, as an object. And there was a second part of me, which I just called my essential self, that had to do more with a kind of an internal perspective and ability to reflect. And that personal philosophy started to collide with my external reality when I was a senior manager in a Fortune 50 company. That was falling off a cliff. I worked for Digital Equipment Corporation. We were number two in the world, the number two computer company in the world, chasing IBM. And suddenly my company hit a wall. I was confounded why we couldn't get the strategy right and reset our mindset, but we did neither. And as a consequence, the company failed. I lost all my wealth. I lost what fortune I had, and it really got my attention around what makes it so difficult for organizations in the modern day. This was 1994. What makes it so difficult for organizations to actually undergo change? And so that was a catalyst that that launched me forward towards this book and towards this this next line of work, and actually next career for me from 94 till now has been my third career, John. So that's the short story.
Well, John, and so let me tie a couple of things here together, because if some of the work, the education around developmental theory, and then as you're bringing that into the work experience and you're reflecting upon it, and as I was introducing the notion of dependence to independence to interdependence, there's somewhat, it feels to me, and maybe you can reflect on that a little bit more, that there is somewhat of a hierarchy of cultures. I mean, in other words, some is more rich and expansive than others. Maybe that's a good place to start with our listeners, to give a sense of when you're talking about cultures and the way people work and live and engage together, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, John, there is a hierarchy of cultures that does exist in organizations. And each successive or advancing culture is more capable of dealing with more complexity and more uncertainty and more ambiguity. Each successive culture is more sophisticated, if you will, and has more capability, has increasing capability. And so what I've been noticing for a very long time is that that each of these three types of cultures actually tracks with and extends both the theory and research of individual evolution and individual development. And what we've done that many others have talked about, but I think there are very few organizations that have actually done the research that brings the individual development theory together to a collective leadership development theory around culture, is we've actually done case studies and looked at these three types of culture in depth with many organizations and have a research stream in which we both stand and talk about this. And if you think about it, John, it really parallels the three kinds of organizations that have evolved since World War II. Coming out of World War II and that era, that sort of post-industrial era, all organizations primarily were steep hierarchies. They were command and control kinds of organizations built around conformance, where decisions were made at the top and power was held at the top. That gave way from the 60s into the 70s with a much more hub-and-spoke kind of distributed power organization, which we saw in many of the high-tech organizations. And this third type of organization has been emergent more recently and is needed by lots and lots of organizations. That interdependence seems to look a little bit more like the Holy Grail to lots of folks. In other words, a lot of people want it, but not many people have it.
Well, and I think that's where we want to go, John. And I can hear the music in the backdrop here, but also for our listeners, that you are making the case here about the nature of these cultures, the organizations you've just described, and the relationship to the mindsets involved. We had a blip in the feed here for just a second, but we're going to pick up on that. Let's take a break, audience. We'll come back in a second to continue with John, start to flesh this out, bring this together from where our conversation has been. This is Zoomed on this Monday. Come back in a minute. Thanks.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders, not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview? Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Class is in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, good. Back today, John McGuire, our guest, senior faculty from Center for Creative Leadership. Our conversation is around headroom for transformation and change. Our conversation is around John's book, Transforming Your Leadership Culture. John, the first segment, we started to frame up this perspective of the organizations, the evolution from a dependent state and an interaction as a culture to an independent, to an interdependent. And as I was saying on break, maybe just your perspective on this relative to the world, relative to the context, as I'm describing as a year of extraordinary change. What's the demand for it, and why interdependent organizations?
Yeah, I think the interdependence is in some ways a very foreign idea, and you know, you start talking about collaboration, and people think, oh yeah, that's consensus building and having endless meetings and kind of never having time to do the work. But that's not what is meant. So let me take you to the turn of the century, when at CCL our research and development team started to explore this. We did five different major market surveys, but the one that was the most compelling was actually an internal exercise where I went through personally 66 proposals from clients that we had responded to clients in the late 1990s, and paid attention to what they were asking for. And in nearly two-thirds of those, in other words, 44 of those 66 proposals, clients were asking us for help the executive team work together. Help our organization that's so silo-driven to work across these silos. Otherwise, we can't drive our value chain. We can't get our supply chain, you know, to work appropriately. Asking specifically for collaboration and working across boundaries more effectively. So, in two-thirds of the proposals at the turn of the century, we were hearing clients crying out for interdependent work systems and interdependent cultures, and more interdependent and collaborative kinds of mindsets. And so that context, rolling forward, was very compelling to us, because what we found was, and what we began to ask ourselves was, gee, are there any interdependent organizational cultures out there? Are there any interdependent work systems in corporate America, or any other organizational systems you know, that we can find? And that was our compelling question, John.
Well, and that parallels well, John, with our conversation on Zoom, that the context, the larger issues, the larger systems, you know, we've been talking about this energy, economy, environment, been talking about it more broadly. We've taken it down, dipped it down, but we're talking about the interdependent nature of the systems, the issues, and how there is a means and a need to collaborate, as you were describing in your article in the Washington Post. But the reality, John, you and I have talked about, and you talk about in your book as well, that large-scale change processes, whether it's your clients at CCL who are looking to make shifts back in the late 90s, early 2000s, or whether it's large-scale change efforts that range from re-engineering to let's go transform and localize the community, really are yielding limited success. I mean, the numbers, I think, as you have even pointed out, to 75% of change efforts fail, 90% of new strategies fail. So there's something missing here. And so my first question then becomes, what's missing and how is it that we need to begin to engage? And let's start and get personal with our own organizations first. What do we need to do in our organizations to begin this movement towards something more interdependent?
Yeah, good question. And I think that this brings into stark relief that what's missing is essentially our internal selves, our in some ways our more essential selves. I mentioned sort of essential selves and functional selves. Certainly in corporate America and corporations globally, you know, for decades, there has been an almost obsession with the organization as an it or as an object to be analyzed and manipulated. And so we've gotten very, very good at understanding systems and structures and processes as mechanisms for running our organizations. But what we've essentially lost is that more internal, reflective self, a kind of soul, if you will, that holds emotions and holds spirit and holds imagination and holds a deeper sense, a stronger ability to reflect and to imagine a better way of doing things. And so what we find missing is, and let me translate that into, we're very good in organizations at left-brain stuff, and we're terrible at right-brain stuff. And so what we have found is that if we can get organizations to focus on leadership and to slow down in order to power up, to slow down to do some of the more reflective work and the leadership development work, in other words, if we can get clients to slow down and focus, if you will, on their leadership strategy as much as they do their business strategy, we think we can significantly increase the probability of success going forward.
And John, with that, you're in the cultural context. When you say leadership strategy, are you talking about it from the leadership as the leadership cadre, the leadership within the organization? In other words, doing this interior kind of work collectively more than just doing it on our own?
Exactly. The whole idea is to create a kind of a unified force for facing these uncertain futures, a unified force that can actually become a collective body of the kind of a constant renewal that you've been talking about on this radio show for quite a while now.
And so, and I'm drawing upon your book, you're using the language, we've used the language sort of an interiority, but you're really describing in your book that this is an inside-out perspective as opposed to more of the functional side, which is an outside-in. Maybe you can point to that and clarify in your words what that might really mean and how to get that, to get the attention to that.
Yeah, thanks, John. You know, there's it's very clear that all adult learning is based on two things, action and reflection. And what we find in most organizations, in most industries, in most sectors, is that people are very, very focused on the action and not very focused on the reflection. And that the real concern here is about bringing into alignment, bringing into balance this left brain, right brain, this action orientation versus a reflection orientation, this focus on the external driving systems and structures versus spending time on the internal, using reflection as a learning mechanism and actually slowing down and taking the time collectively to learn together and to make sense of things. What we found, John, that's very, very clear is that most change management perspectives and most consulting companies that have gone after change management, you know, we're into the third decade of that now, failure rates have not gotten any better at all. They're still 3 out of 4 enterprise-wide change efforts fail after all this time. We believe that that's true because almost all of the time that's spent by most consulting companies in change management has to do with this external perspective of systems and structure and processes, and spends almost no time focused on the interior life of people and the beliefs. So what that takes us down to is that it's a fairly simple kind of equation where beliefs drive decisions, certainly in an unconscious way. Decisions are made. Executives make 100 decisions a day, easily. 90-plus of those decisions are not conscious at all. They're just based on a set of beliefs that are almost on automatic pilot. Executives are unconsciously confident, if you will, about making decisions. And those beliefs are driving those decisions, and decisions drive behaviors, and repeated behaviors are practices. And so we're saying something very simple here, and that is that if you want best practices, you really need to get best beliefs. And the only way we know how to do that, to get to best beliefs, is to slow down, have reflective conversations, use some of the power tools that we have, and then look at reorienting and actually re-engineering and creating new belief systems across senior leaders. That's where we think the work begins, is with senior leadership and their belief systems.
And John, this feels like a real parallel to our conversation on Zoomed, which is that interior dimension examines the beliefs, but part of what we've been looking at is the assumptions and the values upon which we're making our decisions that drive sustainability and lack of it. You're going into that realm here, I assume, then. It is about the beliefs, but what is it makes up our beliefs, and what is it that surrounds that?
We absolutely are, John. And, you know, we have a pretty deep and substantial toolkit. But at the core of our toolkit are tools that create what we call headroom. And by headroom, we mean it quite literally, and we mean it metaphorically. We mean quite literally that we want to give the operating space and the reflection space and the meaning-making space for people together to get bigger minds, to open their minds, to examine their deep beliefs and assumptions and values, and to reorient themselves around that, and to do it in a collective way. And these tools also create headroom by essentially lifting the ceiling of their current constructs and mindsets, so that collectively they can grow, that they can grow their leadership capability in significant ways.
And I think what you've hit there, the space and allowance for that, the tools to support it, but actually the space to lifting the ceiling. John, I'd like to pick up on that. I hear that we have the music coming on with us, but let's continue this and lifting the ceiling, because that's the nature of the issues that we're dealing with, are the ceiling issues and how to translate those down. I'd like to get more perspective on that and get grounded on some examples and where this is being done, what some of the experiences is. I'm curious about the resistance, curious about where people are in this, because it's so natural to be in the exterior focus. We've built our business systems around that, and much of the discipline of business and training as well as organizational side. But let's come back, folks. We'll take a break here with John McGuire. Come back in a minute, and we'll continue on Zoomed today. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? the way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Stop wasting time. Get what you want. Live your dream life. The Dream Big Revolution. Imagine having more freedom, better health, more money, happiness. Could your business be more successful? Unless you're living the life you want, you're wasting precious time. Your life is too valuable to waste. Let Leanne Hilgers help you find health, wealth, and happiness. Listen in and live your dream life. Join the Dream Big Revolution. Tune in every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Seventh Wave Network. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again here with John McGuire. Conversation we left off with headroom, but the context of this is building organizations from dependent organizations to independent organizations to interdependent organizations. The nature of leadership certainly has an impact on that, John. And so if we framed it up in the first couple of segments, maybe a story or two or some examples to bring this to life. Because I've got to imagine, as I'm saying, organizations differ, that it's not usual to slow down in our environment, and it's not usual to have such a rich interior orientation. But what does make it work? What drives it?
Yes, John, I think that there are some critical success factors, and the one that I'll start with is it's critical to have at least a few senior executives who are already there, who already have a mindset which is somewhat consistent with a renewal point of view, with a both-and thinking, and with systems level thinking, with critical thinking, and it doesn't have to be the CEO, but it makes a big difference to have at least a few key executives, because our point of view and our philosophy is that when you're developing leadership culture, if you want to get it real change, you got to get to the belief systems, and if you want to move from dependent to independent, for example, then you're going to have to alter and shift and upscale those belief systems to the next level of the culture. And so you're going to need key senior executive leaders who are either in support of that and willing to develop themselves, or who are already there and want to bring the organization forward. So a couple key stories. We worked with a very large global electronics organization for a while, who were doing the big double-double. We're going to double our revenue in 2 years, and they had been in the double-double for 6 years running with revenue flat as a pancake. when we got there, what we found was that the CEO was really operating at a conformist level, and it just wasn't a feasible kind of change alternative. There wasn't the leadership mindset at the executive level and in that team to make it feasible to do the change. An alternative story is we're working with a global elevator company, and our initial work was with the CEO and the executive vice president of HR, and both of those people were very much attuned to moving from in their own individual logic or their own individual leader mindset, were very much attuned to moving from an independent point of view, which of course is the basis of everybody's career success in corporate America. We all move through that stage. Mm-hmm. But moving squarely into the more interdependent collaborative, they saw the need, they understood the requirement, and they wanted to move their organization from a position of number four to the top of the heap in terms of developing and achieving industry leadership.
So let me just play this back to our audience here. What you're describing, you've got a dependent culture in the organization, which would normally have conformer kinds of thinking in terms of the individual leaders and the senior executives, and what you would need would be more of an achiever kind of a perspective to be included to make the link to the independent. And likewise, from independent to interdependent, you would need not only achievers, but you'd need some perspective to bring that the top side, to open up the top side of the minds and open up the top of the box. You need something that's a more of a collaborator perspective. You need to enrich the mix is what I'm hearing, to have the depth of the conversation you're talking about.
Very well said, clearly and concisely, and even further, because most organizations are not a kind of uniform system. You'll have various subcultures throughout an organization. What we will often find is that the core of the organization itself, or most of the divisions, may be a conformer, a dependent conformer that needs to move to an independent achiever, whereas the executive team itself may be a group of achievers that needs to move itself and maybe the next level down to a more interdependent collaborator. So you may have two different segments of the organization, the middle moving up a notch and the top moving up a higher notch, both moving simultaneously.
And so you're really even playing back the fundamentals of leadership itself, and that is what is really going on, but it's saying what is going on in our culture, what is going on with the collective mindset that's reflected, and how do we then orchestrate an upshift across all of this to move the organization in the way that we need to move for the futures that we're talking about. That's a really compelling and different view, John, to the traditional kinds of change processes and cultural approaches that we read so much and see so much and been living, and you described, for 30 years.
Well, it is, and at the core of it, there's something that's both incredibly simple that we call learning, and incredibly complex because you're asking senior executives, who are human beings who are used to having a sense of themselves as very advanced, very successful, people, and you're calling into question the very criteria that their advancement and successment has been built on. And we call that process discovery learning. And the whole thing about inside out and internal awareness and getting at their more essential selves requires them to collectively and in some public sense do learning that brings into question not only those success criteria that they've been practicing for a long time, but in which they find themselves in an arena where they're taking public risks, they're making themselves vulnerable, they're learning in front of their peers and in front of other people, because in order to actually do discovery learning and to advance yourself, you have to have this dialogue. And the dialogue is the most important part of the work that we do with these executives and then with the middle of the organization. How can you possibly make a shift in beliefs? How can you possibly have a sense-making process at an organizational level without having that dialogue? And by definition, the dialogue has personal risks in it, people taking vulnerability on seriously, and taking time out for learning.
And so this is a deeper process. This is one that's much more reflective. You go to the point when you began talking about your own awareness from a functional and essential self. This is a sense that really drives back or opens up an awareness about much more of our essential selves, what that is. And I'm curious, John, what your experience is in the organizations you've been doing this work. There's got to be a readiness factor involved here. What have you found?
Well, there is a readiness factor, and we've got several tools and lots of criteria that we use to sort of measure the readiness. What we're dedicated to, John, is to help any and all organizations go to the first stop or the first stage, and that is to do essentially a feasibility analysis about how ready the team and the organization is to actually do this work. We have a lot of tools to help help them measure that, but what we notice is that lots of teams and lots of organizations go running off with big visions and big ideas, but they haven't really done an analysis of what they're capable of and how ready they are to move things forward. So, for example, you got executive teams that are, as we said before, are used to succeeding. That's how they got to where they are. That's how they got to be executives, is by being successful. Those kinds of people are not used to saying to themselves on Sunday night to their wives and their spouses, boy, I can't wait to get to the office tomorrow to talk about that big screw-up I made last Friday. We lost $1 million on that deal, but boy, is that going to be rich learning, and I can't wait to get in the office to tell, all the other vice presidents about that. The shields are up, and you spend a lot more effort sweeping those kinds of things under the carpet. But the fact is that as executives, you have to be ready to do that sort of thing to actually move into this interdependent collaborative space. And the primary driving reason for that is that once you move to, you get serious about moving your leadership mindset into the interdependent and more collaborative space, is that what is number one most important thing is the competence and the capability of the organization. You graduate from what's most important is my competence and my capability. If that makes sense.
Say that again, John. I think we had a breakup on the line here. Just say you graduate from my capacity or my competence to...
Yeah, you graduate from what's most important is my competence and my capability to what's most important in the interdependent space is my company or my organization's competence and the capability of all leadership. So it really moves from an I to a we in terms of the focus. And it's developmental, John. We're using a lot of fancy words like discovery, learning, and risk and vulnerability and graduating. But it's really, really as simple as, a focus on learning.
But, John, I got to imagine, and I know from the experience in our conversation here on Zoom, to get to that place where you're putting it at an organizational level and looking at the collective competency, there's an individual level of development. There's an individual inquiry. There's an individual understanding. It takes place and certainly is gained in a cultural view, but there's a depth of this, and what appealed to me in your book is you're talking about leaders do the change work first. And that's my sense, that it is both the personal and the cultural. And before you answer that, John, I hear the music in the backdrop here, so let me leave that for the next one. I'd like you to respond on that, and then I'd also like to ask a perspective about the larger view and Congress. How do we change Congress? Let's get to that. Let's take a break, and I want to bring the whole piece to a closure with you today in a few moments, John, but let's take a break, folks. Come right back. Thanks.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engel Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engel Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoom Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, last segment today, John McGuire, our guest, Senior Faculty Center for Creative Leadership, and where we've been talking is the nature of interdependence, the nature of headroom. We've been talking about leadership and leverage, that leverage for transformation of our organizations and the larger systems we've been talking about here on Zoomed. John, I left you last time with trying to connect the dots here from an interior standpoint. We're doing something collectively. We're doing something from the culture, the leadership culture as a bridge, executives doing the work first. But I was also pointing to the notion of where does that individual leader and growing and developing and the awareness of the individual leader, the mindset of that individual leader, where does that come into the equation?
Well, it's a really important question. And as you well know, developing myself at the same time we're developing us, can be concurrent. And in our practice, the way we've gone about it is that we're very conscious about doing both. It is in itself a both and. So if I could, John, quickly go back to the elevator company. The big breakthrough that they had when they really launched this work, we did two-day workshop with them, a two-day intensive, and each of the half days, we're centered around a dialogue, and in the dialogue, it's a challenge of dropping advocacy and moving towards inquiry, going deeper into things. And it wasn't until the space between the third and fourth half day and the fourth dialogue that things began to break and break down and break through with this executive team. And the breakdown was that it was their usual kind of their usual very diplomatic and sort of non-confrontative and in some ways not very direct action-oriented practices. And the way that it happened was that a couple of individuals decided to take the risk, and they stepped up to the plate and began to kind of open their kimono and be very honest and engage in truth-telling and do some root cause analysis and bring some emotion to the table and be very authentic, genuine folks and offering themselves up essentially as both an example for how to do the work and doing the work themselves intensely individually. And so that's a story about how executives can do both at the same time. There are also lots of stories of how individuals will work individually through coaching and other means to develop themselves as well. But you're right to continue to point out this is a development process.
And so let me just make that concrete for a second. So what might have come out? How would you describe the concrete beliefs of an independent mindset that might come out in that dialogue as differed from the concrete beliefs that might be expressed in an interdependent?
Well, I'll give you a very concrete example. In this particular meeting, in this particular executive team, they all believed for a dozen very good reasons that they could only meet together intermittently and by teleconference. And by the end of this dialogue, they were convinced that they needed to come together monthly for face-to-face work, and that the face-to-face work needed to move from their normal action operations orientation and into the development of them of themselves individually and collectively as leaders on behalf of the corporation. So they overcame a whole lot of barriers, which were real, you know, structural barriers, things that they had to get done, but came to collectively to a decision that said, no, we're going to overcome all of that. And we're going to come together face-to-face every month and develop ourselves.
So a great example from a business standpoint and beginning to get a sense of it. So let me go back into my opening, and I'm curious about this in our last segment, John, because it feels to me like we have a lot of independent and certainly maybe even some dependent, but let's say independent for the most part, mindsets and perhaps a culture going on in Congress with all the polarities, what I would call and have called before a broken system that we saw in Congress on the healthcare debate. How would you go about changing and opening up the interdependent perspective in policymaking and legislation? How would that actually occur with something like Congress? And I suspect Congress as a whole wouldn't be receptive to this for a lot of different reasons. But how would you go about that?
Well, we'd go about it in the same way that we do with corporations, where we don't believe that the executives or the top team, you know, is really ready to do the work. And so we'll suggest what we call a change leadership team. And that is we'll work with a few people who are motivated and then select a handful of people who could be representative, and in this case from Congress, you know, could you select 10 people, 10 senators or 5 senators or 6 senators that are all collectively that are influencers, that could actually go after a key issue like healthcare, and could influence currently the way things work. And then we would work with them as a change leadership team, and we would use our tools and processes and approaches, and we would focus on one key solid issue and try and get some traction in the Congress. So this approach with the change leadership team, where you work with people who are somewhat ready, develop their readiness, extend that team to the degree possible, bring in more people, and actively work an issue in an action and reflection learning basis.
And John, we've only got about 3 minutes left here on the show, but how might that look? How would that be reflected out if that group in Congress were doing that and they were going to become more interdependent and focused? Let's take an issue, but how might that actually look? What would be the difference in how we would see what actually occurred?
Well, if something like that worked and you were actually piloting an issue, say something around healthcare or whatever the next most important issue that's going to surround us as we move through the summer and into these next elections, you would start to see this group or this body on CNN. You'd start to see the actual influence and impact of a group of senators or congressmen coming together, rallying around an issue, working across the aisle, going beyond just mere compromise to working towards collaboration. And you'd see new legislation, for example, that the executive and legislative branches could begin to rally around. What would stand out, I think, for us as citizens in the United States is that you'd start to see a story that was the opposite of this kind of ideology gone feral on us that we see from the current parties.
Well, I think that's a good representation, John, that we would see something different. And I suspect that in organizations, business, public sector, private sector, that you're and NGOs that you're working with in the last minute, what's your sense of that reflection in them? Is it similar? What is it that actually manifests out of this interdependent? How does it look to us in the world different?
Well, you start to see people that are really working together, that are really concerned about their constituents, that are concerned about their countrymen, that are concerned about the deep outcomes of the issues, rather than positioning for themselves their own political parties. You start to see people who are bringing to the fore real solutions, and whether or not those solutions can actually be realized is in some ways secondary to the effort and the influence of changing the direction. We know that leadership is about direction, alignment, and commitment. And until you change the direction, you can't get alignment and commitment. And so in these kinds of entrenched fights and difficulties that we're seeing globally and through just through our country, you know, more locally, we need a significant change in direction. Once we can do that, alignment and commitment can follow. But it's going to take a kind of much more open-hearted, open systems approach to taking on the most significant issue. And I guess the last thing that I would say, John, is you'd see lots of different experts coming together. Almost any significant issue that we face is going to take multiple experts in a room working together collaboratively in order to even approach the direction of a good solution.
John, I think you've summed it up well, and I appreciate it, but I go back to your language here. The headroom that's being created out of the process you're describing starts to lift the ceiling. And lift the ceiling in perspective, and that's the perspective we're trying to open up on Zoom. That's the perspective of the conversation. John, thanks for helping to lift the ceiling today. Really appreciate it. Appreciative of you joining us here.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thank you again, John, I think, for bringing even greater clarity to the essential need for new, deeper, inside-out perspectives and emphasis on leadership and in organizations. And in Congress, as we're describing, because as we've been talking about on Zoomed, we don't change the external systems, we don't change the structures and the institutions until we change that interiority individually and collectively, moving toward interdependence, moving toward a deeper sense of capacity of leadership around the essential nature of who we are. That's our focus on Zoomed. Our conversation continues at the big picture, up close and personal. We'll continue it at the big picture. Lawrence Lessig from Harvard will join us in coming weeks to talk about the nature of fixing Congress first. That's a piece of it. And we'll come in deeper, too, as well, to the essential nature of our own leadership and our own development. Stay with us. Enjoy the conversation. Enjoy your life. Enjoy the big, great transition. Get mobilized. We're in place. We're ready. That's part of our conversation here. Again, thank you, John, for joining us. Until next week, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.